We've got a code. Use code VOLLYPOD for 20% off almost anything on the Art of Coaching Volleyball website, including premium memberships, coaching resources, and nearly all books. That's VOLLYPOD, VOLLEYPOD. Use it to save anytime you're on the site. Are you ready to take your volleyball game to the next level? Every week on the VOLLYPOD, we talk to two top coaches who share their secrets for success on the court. From drills to build skills to strategies for boosting confidence, you won't want to miss this valuable advice. Tune in now and elevate your game today.
Good evening and welcome to the VOLLYPOD. How are you today, Todd?
Davis, doing well. It's great getting back in the pod cave with you. My wife did a little redecorating in here.
Looks good.
Looks good. She's making me clean up all the stuff that I've had in here for 30 years. And all of a sudden now she has it in stacks going, do something with this stuff. So it's good for me.
That's good.
Declutter. Clear my mind.
Yeah, you got all sorts of cool stuff in here, though. It's awesome.
A lot of volleyball stuff that it's time to probably get rid of some of it.
Yeah, but I mean, you can see where you get some of your ideas from. It's cool. Right on. So we got a really cool episode today, and I believe I am on with the skill of the day.
What do you got?
Okay, so I'm going to set this up by saying, if it's so important, how come we don't teach it that much? And I think it's really important. Can you hit the ball super hard? And if you were a pitcher, you would be training on how to throw the ball super hard all the time. If you were an infielder, same thing, get the ball to first base, you know, whatever. In volleyball, hitting the ball hard has so many benefits, right? Now, it's not the only thing when trying to score the point, but it does matter. And I think there should be more time and attention spent to it because there are some things that you can do that will really help your athletes to hit harder.
Before you get into that,
let's do it.
I always wonder about things that are undervalued, especially when it comes to, you know, I never really coached in college. I did a little stint with the men at UCSD with a buddy of mine and assisted, but never really got into recruiting. But you know, all our friends that are into recruiting and all of our kids that get recruited, saying, gosh, if I ever were in that situation, you know, what's undervalued? And I always thought kids with big arms that serve at high velocity kind of easily and hit the crap out of it.
Yes.
Just naturally just hit the crap out of it. Even if they're not at 10 feet or even if they're not big jumpers or whatever, is that undervalued? So I love that you're doing this. So I just wanted to give you my props for that.
Well, thank you. Now, and I would agree. And I mean, obviously jumping high and all those things matter, but I'm going to say that there are things that you can do to become a harder hitter. Right. And so first of all, let's talk about some things that don't matter that much. And I'll see these things recommended as things that you can do to hit harder. And they may add a little, but I don't think they're where your time should be focused if you're a coach.
Okay.
First is timing. Now everyone's going to say, well, timing does matter for hitting hard, and it does, but I think it's a relatively minor factor. So you could go slow to fast and end up going really fast and not hit the ball hard, right? It is not a critical factor. I definitely think it helps, right? Having good timing, but it's not the key thing. How high you jump. In fact, one of the highest jumpers I've ever seen, it was this guy, Hector Soto. He had like a 50-inch vertical, and he didn't hit that hard. And I was like, this guy's way above the top. I think he doesn't like lead the world in kills, you know? But it's because he couldn't hit that hard. And it's nice to jump high. And in fact, I saw Jordan Kilgannon, I believe his name is, and he's a professional dunker. He's got like 50-inch verticals, and I've seen some clips of him playing volleyball. Can't hit. he can't hit. He outjumps me by, you know, five times, and I'll dominate. But it's nice to jump high, but it doesn't make you hit hard. It can allow you some more time in the air, which can help you do some stuff with your arm, but it doesn't inherently make you jump harder. And then goofy footed or not. This one's interesting. I've seen some amazingly hard hitting goofy footers, right? It's not your footwork doesn't make you hit hard or not. It definitely helps. Again, you should probably not be goofy footed, but I've seen some guys that just destroy the ball. In fact, there was like a Bulgarian opposite who was one of the best in the Olympics. This is probably 20 years ago, but I mean, this guy just destroyed the ball. I mean,
well, we say on the right side where, you know, it's, you can still open your torso to get torque to hit when you're goofy foot on the right. Right. It's not as critical as it might be on the left.
Right.
So those are some things that maybe aren't the top, that aren't the most important.
Right.
What is important?
Okay. Mechanics that matter. Okay. Mechanics that matter is a coordinated explosive motion in sequence. And I'm saying it like that, sort of wordy on purpose, because the in sequence part really matters. You have to flow from the big body parts to the tip of your hand. And by flow, I mean the, your lower half works against your upper half to not only torque, which is turning, but also fold, which is, you know, levering the top against the bottom, in a concerted effort to make your hand go the fastest. So you'll go hips, shoulders, elbow, wrist, and fingers. And if you can do that coordinated explosive motion in sequence, you're going to hit the ball very hard. Okay. Now, when you're young, I think one of the big things is they don't want to make errors. So they don't take full swings a lot of times. So that's why we were talking last pod, encourage them to hit, take big swings, obviously at the right time, you know, in the right scenarios, but you know, can they hit the ball hard when they're just playing? Right. And there's some things here that can help. I want to talk about first trunk twists. Okay. Trunk twists are where you twist your lower half of your body against the upper half of your body, and you try to get as much hip shoulder separation as possible. So that's in general why they teach the right left, is you'll come over and your hips will be slightly open, allowing you to open up your shoulders away from your hips even more. This should not be confused with opening up. Opening up is not the same as hip shoulder separation. Like, I could totally be facing to the right side of the court and not get hip shoulder separation, which is where you get power from. So in order to do that, and in fact, some guys.
So you really, I mean, when you look at it, you don't necessarily want your feet to be parallel to the net, because then you're open, but you don't really have that separation.
Exactly.
Is that right? So
yes,
that separation is what gives you some of that power. And I think I've never really, it's that elasticity, I guess, of, yes, that separation.
Absolutely. And they would say, you know, Nolan Ryan, you could see his back pocket in the outfield, right? A lot of the stuff I get from pitching and watching sort of high level hitters, but this idea, can your whole body coil against itself and be elastic, and then you release that, and then that will all come spinning in and be really, really powerful. And that's torque, right? The other one, though, that has been out of style, I guess, if you will, lately is folding and
piking.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. I've been an anti-piker. Yes.
Now I am too, if I had to choose one, but you don't have to choose one, and all the best hitters fold to a degree, right? Now, if you're hitting high, you fold a little bit at the shoulders. If you're trying to, you know, bounce the ball down, you fold a little bit more like at the waist. But this idea of, can you crunch forward using your abdominals, which are some of your strongest muscles, right? So the upper body and the lower body drive towards each other and it snaps against each other. So you do the trunk twist as you're folding. And look, they did studies that say torquing, you get more power than folding, right? So I'm going to teach my kids how to torque, but I'm also going to teach them a little bit of folding as well.
Okay, I'll play devil's advocate. Please. A little bit. I think we have to be careful with folding.
I agree. I know.
Or
I think I know
piking,
what you're going to say.
Because
yes,
I think it just pulls stuff down.
Yes.
And I think at men's volleyball, if you're, you know, at 11 feet and you're 3 feet over an 8-foot net, then maybe you can pike a little bit to get a little extra power, and you're still clearing the net by plenty of inches.
Yeah.
Where if you're, you know, a high school girl touching 9'3",
Don't pull the ball down.
And you're starting to fold and you're going, I'm practicing piking. And I see these kids hitting against a wall and piking when they're hitting down against the wall. I'm going, oh, it's a recipe for disaster.
I agree. And the reason I would also teach torquing over piking is if you're only piking, you can get some back issues where you're kind of just using only your back to kind of pull yourself down into it. And that can be dangerous where the trunk yep. turns are much more safe.
Yeah. And I think on the positive side, if you can really do it, the ball has to be in front of you.
Yes, absolutely. And
it's hard to, you can't pike when the ball's behind you.
Right, right. I like it from hitting from the back row, right, where you're pulling the ball down, but you're already hitting it so far up that pulling it down is of benefit to you. But hitting on the net, I would agree with you. So next, this whip effect. And I think you know what I mean, you can look at certain hitters and the tip of their hand is going so fast because everything has happened at the correct time, right? Everything flows and snaps correctly. And that's what I call the whip effect. You can see hitters that look like a whip where others are more of a hammer. Now the hammers won't get as much speed on their hand. And especially if they are comparable in terms of like weight and stuff like that, they won't put as much power on the ball because they're just generally not putting enough speed into their hand. How does that happen? Again, just a concerted effort from the whole body. This idea of stretch and contract. If you try to hit with muscles, it doesn't work. Only rarely do you see really buff, amazing hitters. Right. There's a couple. Jason Ring, he was huge and buff, but you don't really see it that much because, you know, stiff body parts don't move fast. So you want a loose body part, right? You want loose and then everything contracts. Your chest is up and stretched. Your arm is back and stretched. Your elbow is bent and it's bent throughout the whole motion. It's not going straight too soon. And this idea of stretch and contract. Now, obviously, there's some physical things that matter too. Core strength is especially key, right? Back strength and flexibility and stability. And then elbow and shoulder flexibility, strength. And then your arm prep and release. And then treat the body like a pitcher treats their arm. Like after every game that a pitcher pitches, they have ice on their elbow and hitters should be trying to rip the ball that hard that they need ice, in my opinion. And then what to do. So here's some just little activities that you can totally do. Okay. Slow-mo arm swings. Really develop a key arm swing at the top. Like make sure that your arm swing's doing great motion. Next, what I call big ball bounces. And I know you're not keen on this one, but this is more for beginners. Can you hit the ball off the ground to the ceiling, right? And then can you hit the ball off the wall to the net or over the net, something like that? Can you just continually try to get more speed on your swings? The big stretch, okay? The big stretch is where you're going to take your elbow and you're going to try to put it all the way back behind your back and stretch your elbow back till you feel that hip shoulder separation. And then the reverse C position. And you see this when you see hitters in the air. Their feet are kind of kicked up and their chest is up and their arm is pulled back. So it's almost like a reverse C position. You do that so that everything snaps forward. If everything's sort of straight up and linear, then you don't have as much of a snap.
Yep, that stretch reflex.
A stretch reflex, right?
Yep.
A line to a line. So this is one that Terry Liskevich got me thinking about. He's got a great one on the art of coaching, but you make this line from your hitting shoulder down through your body to your opposite heel. And that's the power line. If you can stay on that power line, you're going to hit harder. Make your elbow wait. So everything starts turning your body, that is, but your elbow is still back. Okay, so we need to make the elbow weight. A lot of times it goes with the hip and you just won't hit that hard.
Yeah, so in tennis, call that lag.
Lag, yes,
yeah, I like that. So you look at those tennis players and the racket's kind of lagging back.
Yes.
And then they accelerate through it, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
And if they're not, there's something that you can do called elbow taps where you just literally just tap their elbow lightly as they're going through their motion. And it's just to make them feel it. Where is your elbow, right? And then I just put rip the ball. I have four different conditions. Rip the back row. I really think hitting out of the back row is a great way to shape your arm swing. Rip in hitting lines. It's a great way to get the feel of pulling the ball down. Okay, but which you don't always want, right? And rip in games, right? Like a lot of times after a tournament, it'll be the best you felt as far as hitting hard. And rip every set. Like, can you get good at hitting every ball, right? And I think those would be some things that will help you hit hard. You had anything to add to that?
Yeah, I know you play. What's the game you play? You play like bomber ball or something? What do you call it?
Yeah. What do we call it? I don't know. It's hammer or die. Hammer or die.
Okay.
Yeah, where they got to get a big swing.
You got to hit the ball as hard as you can. Yes. Or you can't score. So yep. That's the only rule. And yep. If you hit it out, it doesn't matter.
Yep. Hammer or die. Yep. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was like bomber ball or something. I renamed it. So
that's a better name.
I like it. I like that where you're just throwing bombs and we played around with the radar gun.
Oh, nice.
You know, okay. And doing it with our attackers.
Okay.
And nice. We came in and who hits the ball the hardest? And, Kaya came in and hit the ball, and then we had Kasia last year, and Kasia came in and hit like 1 mile an hour harder than Kaya, which was big because Kaya has
she destroys.
She's got a gun, and measure it. Hey, what gets measured gets done. So good stuff. I like it.
Very cool. Super fun.
I like it. You got to practice hitting hard. If you're going to do it, you got to practice doing it.
Absolutely. And I guess the big idea is there are some things you can do about it.
Yep.
I feel like everyone says, well, this person's a hard hitter. This person's not. There, that's it. No, you can do some stuff about it. So anyways, you're on to the scenario.
All right. Scenario. My team needs more targeted serving work in practice.
What is this about me? Is this about my team?
It's about every coach. Every practice I drive home, I go, we got to serve more.
Yes.
And when we say targeted, it's not necessarily, I'm not talking about serving two targets, although we'll talk about that. I want to talk about targeted to more resemble match serving.
Yes. Okay.
And so what are those qualities? I want to talk about a couple of those first. So number one, most important for me right now, is there is some consequence for missing. Mm-hmm. I just walk around the gym so many times and see these teams serving and a kid's back there and they'll serve two balls that are just way out. And then one that hits the target on that, a box on the court, and the coach, oh, great serve. Right. I'm going, wait a minute. There were three serves. Right. Two of them were horrible. She's not going to get a chance to serve that third serve in the match at all. She's going to spin through twice with those two misses.
Right.
Right. We're never going to see that one. So there has to be some consequence. Number two, do we stat it and write it down? Is there, and that's part of the consequence, but if it's important, then we should measure it. And that's a bunch of ways to do that. And when we look at that, we're looking at percentage. We played around with we're in this 90%. We think that, hey, 9 out of 10 serves, if you're playing a lot of volleyball, you should be able to do that. Our 11s were at 85 is our goal. We were at 88 one tournament, which was pretty good. And then we fell down to 83 last tournament.
Oh,
so, we're playing around with it.
Yeah.
We never serve more than 10 serves at a time.
Okay.
So we don't want to go back there and serve 100 serves because that's not what happens in a game. So 10 is, I think, probably too many, but we'll talk about why, because we do a little serving test with 10. Several short serving blocks rather than one long one.
I like that.
And we can do that before and after water breaks. That's just natural. It's in your practice plan because you're going to get water in your practice. So can you put your serving right around there? So it's just there. It's just tethered to the water. So you don't, we forgot to get that serving in. And then between competitive games. So I think at the end of practice, sometimes you go, we're playing. You don't want to stop it, but it's not bad to go, hey, we're playing this game and then we're going to serve and then we're going to go back and play another game. And the serving breaks it up. Serving to passers. So we always talk about serving drills and we think about serving. Serving to passers is could be part of that too, that makes it more game-like. Serving to appropriate targets. I'm an elastic guy, so I like serving under elastic. And you just put that there and tell kids to serve under it. You don't have to really talk too much about it.
Right.
It's there. And then, you know, floaters. I mean, you know, for me, under the elastic floating is more important than to a certain area of the court. I like it out of the middle of the court. So I might just say, hey, we put lines down the middle and just go, hey, we're not serving the middle. We think that's the easiest place to pass. Libero is often sitting there. Can we choose one of the other areas, you know, toward area one or toward area five, serve there. And then the last thing is our best servers serve more than our weakest servers.
Mm, that's a good one.
And that is built into this too. So I'm going to talk about three serving activities.
Can I jump in real quick?
You can put in any practice. Yeah.
So two things really quick. Serving to passers to me is like a pitcher throwing to batters, meaning it's analogous, meaning you could throw some good pitches that they hit dingers off of.
Yep.
Right. And so I like this idea of throwing to passers or serving the passers. It's just way more game like.
Yep.
I like that. And then the only other thing I was going to say is I just think we serve too often to targets where we could just put a passer there. Like you're just serving to Jane and Jane's the target, you know, versus you're going to serve to zone one. I just think it's so much more powerful and so much more information about a real serving opportunity.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm going to get a couple that don't do that.
Okay.
We have one that we do every practice that we call three in a row serve pass.
Okay.
And that's where we kind of always do that. But if we want little bits, these are kind of little bits. And the first one is a good one, especially for young teams. It's just serve three. Okay. And it's basically, hey, serve and chase three balls. Okay. And super simple. And let's say you have 10 players. And they serve and pass and they come back and they hold up their fingers. How many did you get in?
Okay.
And they might say, you know, one, two, three, or zero. And then you count them up and you go, okay, wait a minute. We had, 27. We're at 90%. That was great. Oh, 24. We were at 80%.
Right.
Okay. Not so good.
Right.
And then we might say, oh, hey, we had 24. Go get some water. We got to beat 24. We got to get at least 25 out of, you know, for that. And so it's just cool. Little bits. Serve like and chase.
Yeah.
Takes, you know, a minute, 2 minutes max. Super easy. The next one is kind of my latest one, and we call it 3x3.
Okay.
And we do it two-sided with young teams. So we're not so concerned with kids getting pegged with a ball because they're not serving that hard. So when we do it, it works like this. We have half the team on each side. Every player has a ball. To complete the task, a player must serve three sets of three in a row. So they serve numbers 1 through 3 in a row on one side of the court. And then for 4 to 6, they run to the other side of the court.
Okay.
And so, you know, when you finish the first one, there's sort of a little pressure. Like if I get my three and you're still standing there getting yours, it's like, oh,
I'm on the wrong side of the court.
Right. And then you count them out loud.
Okay.
If you miss, you have to run and touch the center line.
Oh. Okay.
And that sends you back to that group of three. So if we start serving and let's say we both hit our first two serves, you hit your third, you yell three, you run to the other side of the court to start 4 through 6.
Okay.
I miss mine. I go touch the center line, run back to my side and go back to number one.
Okay.
I like okay. Yes. And so once you get that three, they're banked.
Okay.
So once you get to six, they're banked. And then you run back to your original side to get 7 through 9.
Nice. I like that.
Okay. So one player might get 9 in a row. It might happen real fast. So we usually end the drill when 3 people get to 9. The person who gets, let's say a person serves 9 in a row in and gets that 9, she can keep going. She can get 10, 11, 12.
Okay.
Okay. And then once 3 people get it, you stop it and then you put their numbers down. So I could have gotten stuck on that one side on my third, make two, miss one, make two, miss one. And I end up with my highest number was 2. And then you might have served, not made an error. You might have 14.
Great.
So we have that. A number that goes and you put it up on the board and you do that. Okay. Once again, it doesn't take that long. Right. It takes probably 3 minutes. But once again, it has some of those qualities where you pay for misses.
Right.
Right.
I like it. I like it a lot.
And the last one is kind of JJ does what he calls a serving test. Okay. And so I'm trying to do something like that. So the latest one we made up is what we call 100-second whistle serving.
Okay.
And so we do it two-sided, but let's say for your team, you would do it one-sided. Okay. And so you would do half your team. So you would have three people serving at a time.
Okay.
And you'd blow the whistle and they would serve. Every 5 seconds, you blow the whistle and serve. And then the three behind them. So you're doing six at a time. And so you blow the whistle, serve, blow the whistle, serve. Okay. Every 5 seconds, blow the whistle, serve. They all serve at once.
Okay.
If they miss once again, they have to go touch the center line and they skip their next turn.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay. And then they have to kind of stand there and kind of watch their other two people serve. They have to stay with their group. They can't go and join that other group of three. So not only do you have to run and touch the line, you got to kind of sit there. And so there's this kind of added pressure when you miss to go back and serve in after you miss.
Right.
So I kind of like that. And it happens at a whistle.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. That's cool.
And so at 100 seconds, if you're blowing the whistle every five, then the maximum number of serves you have is 10. And so you can, at the end of it, you can say, okay, how many did you get out of 10? Or you can go in a row. And then you mark it.
Very cool. Okay. I like that.
If you're doing advanced, you go half and half. Usually we would always say, if we had a winner, we might let her go with a group of four in the group two. So the person that wins group one, you get to go again with group two. You don't have to shag.
Okay. That's cool. Okay. Yes. Some benefits.
And so those are the three. So the first one, once again, was serve three, super quick. Three by three, three sets of three in a row. Nice. And the last one, 100 second whistle serving.
I love it. That's great. Okay. Those are really cool.
All right. So stuff to play around with in your next practice.
I love it. I'm going to definitely steal a bunch of those. Right. Those are great.
So good stuff. Takes you to videos.
I'm on the videos. What do you got? So I have four videos this time. Ooh. Usually we do three videos, but I got
going big.
Our buddy Ken Mersak from Emporia State. How to jump higher and hit harder.
There you go.
I got
that's our boy. He likes to hit hard.
He loves it. I have Carrie Wallen from 949 Athletics, and she talks about upper body torque.
Okay.
And then I don't know the coach. It wasn't listed, but this guy was good. And he talked about how to maximize power on outside hits.
Okay.
And then Mark Barnard, training good arm swing technique for more powerful hitting. I think a really good balance of all four videos.
Awesome.
It's awesome. So you are on the resource.
All right. Latest one is a basketball podcast. I got a little website. Okay. It's called Transforming Basketball.
Nice. Okay.
And these guys are going down the ecological dynamics rabbit hole, and yes, they are far down the hole, Davis.
Okay.
So they're talking about kids. And so you think about something like dribbling, right?
Yes.
And you think about, well, you got to just do some skill work dribbling. And these guys are going, no, you don't do skill work dribbling where you just dribble through cones or anything. What you do is you have an offensive and a defensive player.
Yes.
You always have that. And the defender is trying to tag the offensive person.
Oh, cool.
And both of them are dribbling.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
And then if one of them gets good, then they got to dribble left-handed.
Oh,
and
I like
then
that.
So you have things where they're always trying to put an offensive person and a defensive person there. I'm looking at it kind of saying, hey, do we practice too much open net hitting? Like our middles do a bunch of that stuff. And then we're getting blocked and I'm going, why are we getting blocked? You know? And it's, well, we don't hit against blockers enough, you know, is that. And so the whole eco D thing is, hey, letting kids figure, let, you know, stuff emerge.
Right.
Because you're putting them in that environment, whether it be the environment, the task, or you're doing something with the player to change something they're doing.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I saw one of my friends from college, I guess, out there. She's coaching for Arizona East Valley, and she has this wicked float. And it was it relates to what you were talking about with the serving. I was like, how'd you get such a wicked float? She goes, I served against the first team for about 4 years, you know, it'll work, you know, yep. Like she did that. I mean, golly, if you are in the environment, you will become part of the environment, yep. Right?
So it's cool. So
it's really cool.
Yeah. Stuff. Check it out. They do some interesting stuff. So well done.
Well done. Thank you Good so pod. Much guys. If you would like to check out our socials, please do. On Instagram, we're at aoc.thevolleypod, and on Twitter, we're at The Volley Pod. So once again, thank you so much, Todd.
Well done, Davis. Good night. Bye-bye. Bye.